In 2015, on a beach in Libya, 21 men were marched out and onto that beach. And 20 of them were Coptic Christians. And they were marched out knowing that they were going to be killed. And they were told that unless they denied Christ, they would be beheaded. And they were. But as they were being beheaded, they were heard to be singing hymns and praying to Jesus. Now, there was actually 21 martyrs. There was another man there who was not originally a Christian. He was from Ghana. And he was asked whether he believed in Jesus. And he had been so inspired by the faith of these men that he said, "Their God is my God." And so he also was beheaded and became a saint. He's been canonized also by the Coptic Church as a martyr and a saint. That there are people who are willing to testify by their lives to the love of Jesus Christ and not deny it is not something that is way off in the past. And it's not that far away. It's not a half a world away. Not that long ago in 1928 and not that far away in Mexico, there was a 14-year-old boy, Saint Jose Luis Sanchez del Rio, who was captured by the government and he was tortured so that he would deny his faith in Jesus Christ. At 14, he was saying, "We will spare your life if you say death to Christ the King." And the only thing that he would shout out is, "I will never give in. Viva Cristo Rey, viva la Santa Virgen de Guadalupe." Now, one of the ironies of his martyrdom is that the one who ordered his death was his godfather. His godfather of Eucharist, of his first Eucharist, who was the one who ordered his death. Why do people make this kind of commitment? It's because they are absolutely assured of a future hope, a future life that is more real, that is the relationships that are deeper, a life that is the expression of all of their hopes. They're absolutely positive of that. And they're able to live and make that decision in faith and courage and hope and joy. So why do people torture people to try to make them deny their faith? Because on the underlying role, idea is they don't believe in that hope is real. And that's also a temptation that can be one of ours. You know, we might in our brain bags, I talk a lot about brain bags. You know, in our brain bags, we might believe about heaven and hell, but do we really allow that faith to affect our daily decisions? You know, there's a real temptation to make compromises. And we make compromises not because somebody is trying to torture us or make us deny our faith or trying to saying that you'll be killed if you don't make this compromise. Our compromises usually happen of faith because we don't want somebody to be mad at us. Because we don't want to look different. And maybe just for our own convenience. In the first reading today, we have the example of this mother who is encouraging her sons. You know, the chapter 7, if you get a chance this week, read through all of chapter 7 of 2 Maccabees. It's a bit gruesome, I have to tell you right now. They cut out some of the more gruesome parts. Now, this assures all the teenagers will read this chapter. But this mother is strengthening and encouraging all of her children as they're tortured really hideously in front of her, and then she ultimately is killed as well. It was because she loved them so much that she wanted for them the deepest reality of God's love. That it was more important to her than her love for them, her love even for her own life or for the life of her children. That she loved them that much. I also want you to compare this mother's action with another mother in a book by C.S. Lewis called The Great Divorce. It's talking about the divorce between heaven and hell, not because somebody's marriage is broken apart. Okay? So, but if you get a chance, chapter 11, there's a story of another mother in there. And when we meet her, she meets her brother, and she has a disordered love for her son. She loved her son so much it was oppressive. Because when we get love wrong, we get everything wrong. When she loved her son so much that there was no place for any other love in her heart, not for the love of God. And when her son died, and in the book, you know, God said that her brother says, "In God's mercy, God took your son away from you before you could destroy him." You know, and when she lives out the rest of her life, she lives it in so much grief and sorrow. She has no place for her husband, no place for her daughter, who are grieving as well for the loss of their brother and son. But she has no place for that love and understanding. She makes life a living hell for them. And so that's where we find her as we begin the story. We find her in hell. Now, the whole story of The Great Divorce is everyone gets a free day to go to heaven. And you can stay if you begin to change. And for her, the change is this. She has to open up some space in her heart for some other love other than her son. And she comes into heaven and she demands, "Show me Michael, show me my son." And her brother says, "It's not a matter of denying you seeing your son, but he couldn't see you. You would be invisible for him because there's no other love in your life. There's no other place. Now, we can thicken you up if we allow that you could even love God a little bit. And then we'll work later on about loving God more than Michael. We'll thicken you up so that he can see you. And then, you know, you can stay here." Yay! Now, in the book, it's not clear whether she's able to make that leap. We don't get a resolution to that discussion. But she does. We do get a quote. At one point, she says, "Give me my son, and I'll take him back to hell with me." She would rather have her son in hell with her than open her heart up to the love of God. See, the devil makes us, you know, he tries to take heaven and make it boring in our mind. You know, heaven's going to be a boring place. Sometimes we have in our mind that, you know, there's these angels and harps and it's just goodness all the time and it's got to be boring. We have other ideas of heaven that where, you know, it doesn't really matter what we do. Inevitably, we're all going to get to heaven anyway. Well, that makes a mockery of the love and courage and sacrifice of those 21 martyrs on that beach in Libya, of the courage and joy of a 14-year-old boy who was able to see that his life was rooted in Christ. It makes a lie of what Jesus Christ did on that in that cross and on when he rose from the dead. We're called to the heaven is the really real. It makes sense. You know, Jesus said to the Sadducees, "You got it all backwards. You got it all backwards." You know, this life doesn't tell us what heaven's like. Rather, our relationship with God, the really, the fundamental reality of heaven, all of the heaven is, tells us what this life is supposed to be like, not the other way around. Now, we give thanks for the example of the martyrs who encourage us by their witness of faith, that kind of put us to shame. And we also need to encourage one another. That's what we do at this Mass, where we read these readings, tell these stories. We need to encourage one another to make choices, to live out our relationships, to believe in the real of the world that God has made for us. That heaven is our, we're going to be seen as shadows in this world when we come to be with the Lord in heaven. So we'll learn even more about what it means to love God. Now, we need to be encouraged. If no one else encourages us, remember there's another mother who will also encourage us. There is a mother who will also encourage us to love absolutely her son. Ask and never be afraid of asking for our Blessed Mother, the Blessed Virgin Mary, to ask us, to encourage us, to love God first beyond all things. And then we'll be given everything else besides.